Professor Richard Landes, Israeli historian and author, joins us this morning. Good morning. Thank you for joining us. How are you?
Good morning. Fine.
Good. Let's talk about how realistic this is, because we've unfortunately been down this road before with very little success.
Yeah. Well, I mean, part of what's interesting is that Trump lives in an interesting world which intersects with the real world in very interesting ways, but then also has nothing to do with the real world. So, you know, he called for the ceasefire between Iran and Israel, and it sort of magically worked, I think much to the astonishment of many people. But then he turns to the hostage crisis and thinks that he can use the same kinds of fiats in order to resolve it. And it's not at all clear that that's the case. In particular, what's striking about what Trump does is call on Bibi to close the deal, where the pressure should be on Hamas. And Hamas clearly feels no pressure. It's announced that it's ready to resume talks, but that Israel must leave the strip, and it must be an end to hostilities. And there's still no evidence whatsoever that any deal that Israel is going to be able to cut with Hamas at this point would involve the return of all the hostages, which I suspect at this point would probably be enough to get Bibi to make the deal. But the idea that Trump is sort of telling Israel that it has to cut this deal is itself an expression of his sort of feeling of omnipotence as a result of how well he handled the Iranian affair. And I don't think that it's transferable to the Gaza Strip, which is really, it's a similar phenomenon from Iran, but just very deeply different. And as a result, it's kind of ludicrous for Trump to think that he can tell the Israeli justice system to drop the charges against Bibi, even though many people think that's what they should do. And it's equally ludicrous to think that by putting pressure on Israel, you're going to get a deal that's going to make this situation go away.
So the deal itself, do we know what Hamas is actually demanding? You know, because there's always this public and private way things operate during these negotiations. Do we have a sense of what is really on the table?
No, I don't. Well, you know, look, I'm not, I have no security clearance and I'm not involved, but based on.
And if you did, you couldn't tell us, so that wouldn't help.
Right. But based on what Hamas has done in the past, it's pretty clear that they're offering minimal stuff. And again, and this is really what is so astonishing about the president's tweets, is that, you know, he's putting pressure on Israel where the pressure should be on Hamas. And in fact, I read that one of the hostages said that when Trump was elected, all of a sudden Hamas started treating him and the other hostages better because they were afraid they would be forced to give them up. So, you know, that tells us that Hamas is sensitive to the kinds of demands that are coming from Washington. And yet Trump, instead of using that leverage against them, is turning it against Israel. So, you know, it's hard to say. The man is the man's a maverick. In some cases, it works wonderfully, as it did in Iran. In some cases, it's just counterintuitive and self-destructive.
If Hamas signs a deal, if this deal is signed in no matter what form it is, Hamas will be presented almost with an opportunity, no matter what, to showcase or present success. How damaging is that?
It's hugely damaging. I mean, the whole story of Hamas for the last, well, since 1988, but certainly since 2006 when it took over the Gaza Strip, the whole story of Hamas is to pick these fights that deeply damage the Palestinians, the Gazans. You know, the fact that there's not, out of 500 miles of tunnels underneath Gaza, not one inch, square inch is dedicated to civilian bomb shelters, tells you all you need to know. They want Palestinians to die so that they can use it through the media like CNN and the New York Times to highlight the poor suffering Palestinians, even though they're the ones who are causing that suffering. And no matter what kind of a beating they take, as long as they can survive, they'll be back. And I think that that's essentially what we're looking at, is a situation in which, if there's a deal, Hamas will come back. And it's a catastrophe for everybody, and most of all for the Gazans, just like it'll be a catastrophe for the Iranians if the regime stays and within 2 or 3 years is back at the edge of having a nuclear bomb.